There's no Torah in the Gemara. There's no Pshat in Hilchot Nida. Downright undesirable. It misinterprets the Takana in the wrong direction. Rabbi, we go on to example number 3. Husband and wife have a difference of opinion about educating their child. Let's say it's a girl, where it's turned. She's 14 years old. She's in Israel. Father argues, no state high school education in Israel today except the Ulpanot. That should well be within the terms of reference here. The Ulpanot, a boy goes to Yeshiva Tiponit, the Shiv Meir. So why doesn't the girl go to Kvantada? Or Kvantina? Or Hesliya? So if you hold that key, regular, not good enough for our son, why is it good enough for our daughter? Mammy argues, not cost. Nobody's thrown away last year because of cost, although they're expensive. The mammy says it's enough when she'll go later on to Shehut Lomi or Mora Hayeret. Those are, Mr. Dina, those are the only two Mizgarot I can think of in this elevated crowd. Enough when she goes away home at 18 and she won't really come back. 14 to 18 are vital years. I want my daughter home. Mammy's impression is worth more than any institution. Daddy says, no, what about Hibra after afternoon? They try to persuade, they don't succeed. Well, they go to the law. Show them why. But who has the power of decision in the halakha? Ladies, I'm going to get progressively unpopular. I'm almost certain that's Daddy. Mentioned already this morning, when Mitzvah HaBen al Ha'av, Father Chayav, Talmud Torah, of a son. Father has the primary mitzvah of chinuch for a son. And probably there's no difference with a daughter. Very, very involved makoros, especially with the daughter. There is a chance from a mabit, who's referring to a case after the gay regime, that with a daughter, the situation is reversed. Because if a couple split up, sons over 6, other considerations being equal, go to the father, and the Gemara rules categorically in Tubot, the daughter is always with her mother. The reasons are given in Tshuva HaRosh and Tshuva HaMapit. Especially the latter says, not because of attachment, a mother is better equipped to educate her daughter. Can we learn from that in the stage of marriage? I leave that for the Talmidei Chachamim here for further research. But the standard answer is that no matter of chinuch, maybe a mother has obligations, but a father has priority. And that is the conclusion of Rav Neubius in that excellent chapter which he added in the first edition of Shmirat Shabbat Kilo Tata. How many examples have we had so far? 3 gone, 2 to come. Number 4. Children are a little older. And it looks like there aren't going to be any more children. And I don't allow anybody here to ask why. But a fact, they just aren't. Mummy feels a bit empty. There's so much you can do. And coffee mornings and charity and that sort of thing. She married pretty quickly. Didn't really get a vocation or preparation. Chav at undergraduate stage. Now has come the time not to realize herself. She's got vocational aspirations. She's got ability. She wants to go to law school. Do something serious. Daddy says, no, I don't want canned food when I come home in the evening. I want you nice and refreshed to bring my slippers. Yes, that's part of my theory there. Okay, so now the other one. I hope you didn't hear that. That didn't come from the last one.
Another day.
Mammy says, I want to work. I want to realize myself. It can't be only nappies. I'm sorry, what are nappies? Patouline. That's a song that you read, you have to listen to what? Mammy wants to make something of her life. Daddy says it's unnecessary. If she feels that there are lots of things a woman can do, and otherwise, Father Hashem, we don't need it. We live in Savion. It won't hurt my tax position. It won't bring anything in. I give it all away in tax. He's big business. So what? She said, but there's more than money in it. I just want to do something. Otherwise, I'm going to be unhappy. Now, there are many sociologists here. Don't let's look at it from a sociological angle. It's a tough halacha problem. The problem is absolutely mishpati, legal rights, ma'aseh yadeha. To what extent does it go if she wishes to bring substitution? To what extent are you concerned with their standard of living? Capital, income. Whose capital? To what extent are we concerned with custom, whether most women go out to work or don't go out to work? 6 months with the Mitmachim in Bar-Ilan, I learned the Sugya of Ma'aseh Yadeha for this one sheva. Woman's duty to work outside the home if the husband insists, about which there's a famous rabbi, of course. Woman's right to work outside the home with a husband objecting. Here my conclusion is absolute. That in terms of contemporary society, woman has the right to work. A, on grounds of the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, based on Yerushalmi, the Torah says, the Minhag HaMakom, custom is absolutely decisive. B, on grounds of standard of living, and we're not concerned with where the wealth comes from, the Halacha. If it came to the crux, and it has once or twice, before Beit Din HaRabbani, be it after the Sheila, or as a strictly speaking contractual issue, the woman would win this time. Ma'aseh yadeha in all three forms, economic, femel, domestic, mevasheret, personal, matziah lo et hamita, all three forms of ma'aseh yadeha cannot preclude a woman's vocational realization, which is given full expression in the halakha. Bitul mevili de shimum, idleness brings to boredom, as opposed to the other version, is expressed not only as a duty of a woman in the Mishnah and the halakha, but also as the right of a woman. We try to be objective. This one comes out in the woman's favor. How many have we got so far?
Four.
But now we come to the real one, the obedience issue. After half an hour, Mr. Dean, we get to the subject. Defining it is nearly all the way. Let me give you two examples. But they're both the same. Only one's minor and one's major. You will excuse an example. The first example from an Israeli context. For descriptive purposes, I know it better. Coming to the Moshav is a very charismatic speaker. Young, charismatic, and very, very sincere. A very, very big Yireh Shamayim. And a very devout follower of Eretz Yisrael Hashlema. So much so, that even the previous government's policy wasn't extreme enough for him. Last man out of your meat, and that sort of thing. Mr. Dean, if it's necessary to name him, of course I won't. One young lady, married, phones to another young lady, married, Baruch Hashem, Hakol Beseder. I forgotten that. Come to the coffee morning we're having. She says, I'd love to, Hannah. Aval Baali Shaya. The Oster Shalom? My husband's white against dimension against his views. My husband says you give up everything for peace. Bring them all back from Lebanon. And no such wrong in Yehuda. So maybe it's smart and all that. That's why I say Oz B'Shalom and not Shalom Ashab. If you would know, you'd be furious. Does he have to know? No, it doesn't matter. I don't do things my husband doesn't agree with. I tell you, my heart says I don't agree with my husband one bit on that. I think you can't trust these others one bit. You shouldn't give up one bit. And I think that this party and so forth, they're the true Yehudim. I'm not going against them. I love my husband, despite our different ideologies. We love each other. It doesn't come in the way in any way. Ideology doesn't necessarily have to come in the way. And I just don't do things against my husband. Well, did she have to do that? That's really submission of will. Why do I call this really submission of will? No kids' education is involved, which is a collective responsibility. No domestic duties are involved, which could be contractual. No attractiveness, appeal is involved, which is the essence of the challenge of the marriage relationship. It's straightforward submission of ideology of one person to another. In this case, a woman to a man who wants to be a husband. Is the halakha mechayev. That's the right definition. Now, I'll give you one other example, just because I don't want people to get turned out from a mailer. She won't go to the coffee morning. Well, that it won't be any different. If she goes to the coffee morning or she doesn't go to the coffee morning, let's think of something else. Let's take that example we had before. Children are getting older, and as I said to you, they aren't going to be anymore. And the wife says she wants to go out to law school. So far the same. Husband says, you know, I agree with you. For both of us to be happy, you have to be happy. For the children to be happy, you have to be happy. And for you to be happy, you have to be fulfilled. By all means, learn a profession. But does it have to be law? When I was a kid, my uncle told me, all attorneys are kind of you. I loved you because of your honesty, your sincerity, that's your image in my eyes. And now you have to go off into this legalistic business. You take a brief and he's all right, everyone's all wrong, and you don't know. For guilty you are, you're not guilty. You want to work for that job. What's wrong with being a social worker? I don't mind it takes more hours. I don't mind it brings in less money. It does in Israel, doesn't it here? I don't mind, but that fits in. You're such a kind and good-hearted person. Keep that image for me. So that might be the image I have for you, and I'll do anything for that image. But I feel I've got abilities there. I feel I can serve society. I feel in a more complex and profound sense, an attorney who does his job properly can be serving the community no less than a social worker. And I need to do it. Now, this is submission of vocation. This is no small matter. This I call major. Now, it must be obvious, Mr. Dean, to this very intelligent and alert, we'll see it later in the question, alert audience, that these are just illustrations. Please get the definitions behind the drama. And the definition in both cases is identical. Why? It is her business. Her life, with no self-evident repercussions, if on his right, her functions as a mother, and so forth. Determinate submission of one person's will to another. It is as with regards to this fifth category that I said at the opening of my words, that there's no Makor in Shach. In the Talmud, Bavli or Yerushalmi, that she has to listen. I'm not portraying myself here who knows everything in Shas, badly in Yerushalmi, to the extent that I can state with confidence what's not written there. But today we have ways of knowing. Because if the Yotin gets an Elton might not know what's in the Bavli Yerushalmi. But of course, Manuni and Abira could all know what's in the Bavli Yerushalmi. And they couldn't find a reference. The nearest thing which we have in the Bavli Yerushalmi is that famous statement of contradictions, of honoring, or precedence is a better term, between honoring a father and a mother. The conclusion is that a father comes first. And what's the reason given? Shata v'imcha chayavin b'chod avicha. You and your mother are both obliged to honor your father. Rabotai, the feminists mightn't like that statement, because it doesn't reflect equality. Admittedly, it reflects a degree of inequality. But between equality and submission, there's a huge, huge gap. We haven't proved here submission of will. We've proved that daddy comes first, because mommy has to honor him more than daddy has to honor her. We haven't proved just to obey. It's not a source of obedience. The third source we have for obedience is in a not so well known midrash, Talmud Eliyahu, which in one form is very old. It's mentioned in the Gemara, Tuvot. In present form, it's very new, comparatively speaking, to the midrashim. Certainly not as old, as well known as the Rabba, of the various Rabbot. In the 10th Perek there, which is dealing with the biblical period, we have the phrase, I read it only in English for economy's sake. It's as good as the translation as I can get us. Why was Yael, the wife of Chaver the Keni, singled out of all women that salvation should come to Israel through her? This, of course, is referring to the narrative in the book of Shoftim, Sisra and Deborah. Her partner from Sisra. This is what the Chachamim said. Ya'er was an upright woman. Here I'll give you the Hebrew. Isha Kshera Haita. Could be virtuous woman. And she was carrying out the will of her husband. From here they said, you cannot have a virtuous woman other than the one who carries out the will of her husband. Will of her husband is our category 5, submission. In Talmud of Eliyahu it's brought as Agadah. In Rambam it appears already in a halachic context, to say the least. The Rambam in Perek Tetvav of Hilchot Ishut, at the end of the Perek, after dealing extensively with the mitzvah of procreation, plural, deals with the whole fabric of the human relationship between man and woman. It is no one-sided duty. Rambam starts off by citing the famous Mama Chazal, Mechabed ota ohele ishto kegufo umechabda yoter kegufo. A man should love his wife as himself and honor her more than himself. The Rambam goes on and talks about woman's part. And here a new element enters the picture, which we didn't find before. Listen carefully. This is my best translation. Of course, there is a translation of Rambam in English that I learned in Concordia in Montreal. But it's the same. Similarly, the Chachamim commanded a woman. This is Tetvav Mehichot Ishut HaLachakav. Similarly, Chachamim commanded a woman that she should honor her husband very much. Yoter midai, or should be exceedingly. And she should have reverence for him. The word used is morah. that has the Chalila to translate it, she should be in terror of him. Be in fear of him. It doesn't, more that doesn't mean that. Not with parents and not with us. Reverence is probably the best compromise between respect and fear. But listen to the, we've already got an introduction. More that. Let's listen to the next five words. The Taseh Kol Maseha Alpiv. All her actions should be in accordance with his wishes. If that is, could be a total ambiguous, it doesn't matter. V'yu b'nei ha'komosar omerech. He should be in her eyes as a prince or a king. Ho'lechet b'tarat libo. Following the desires of his heart and keeping away from anything which he dislikes. Now, variations of vocabulary won't make any difference. That's a fairly fair presentation. I've taught it in Hebrew as well. And as part of this audience here, in Domrende Hebrew. And we'll see that it's fair. Rabotai, that lady who wanted to go to the coffee morning, she wasn't keeping the Rambam if she went along. He hates her to go there. He hates the whole concept. That lady who wanted to study a profession, which wasn't in her husband's image or liking, again isn't keeping this Rambam. Last verse of the Rambam, and this is the way of the daughters of Israel and the children of Israel. Kedoshim v'tohorim v'zivugan. Holy and pure in their, how do you want to say zivugan? In their union, I almost said in their meeting. Yours is a, you know, a more euphemistic translation. Mine's a more accurate one. And in this way, their living together will be fine and praiseworthy. Now that's important, that ending. I think it's significant. Rabotai, it is not only that around them. First of all, there's a scholarship which hasn't, and a PhD which hasn't yet been done. In this world of women, in this 800th year of the writing of the Mishneh Torah, woman as it appears in the Mishneh Torah, what do you say that for that, Mr. D? For a doctor. That's a fantastic doctorate from a girl for Stern. It's not an easy picture. The Rambam on Moredet, all the Tamil Hachamim will know. The daughters of Israel are not in prison. She can demand it get because she can't stand it. Look at that. And in the Rambam with Masri on there, the lazy woman, how the Rambam deals with a lazy woman who doesn't do her work at home. Those of you who want to know all about these two things, look in Perek Yud-Aleph and Perek Pop-Aleph and hear what Ishus respectively. And then start on your doctorate. The first person at the post gets it. Woman and the Mishneh Torah. I'm willing to be on the panel, Mr. Dean. But, if anybody thinks that this is unique to Rambam and stopped with Rambam, that's a mistake. Many of Rambam's striking rulings on women, as on other things, were not even accepted in Sfarad. They were stopped before they even got into the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Kalo didn't pass them in the Beis Yosef. This is well known. This did get even into the Ramah. The Ramah I believe in Simon Samotet, Eben Ezer, brings this Lashon HaRam Dan Mamash. There's no upright woman other than carries out the will of her husband. A woman should always carry out the will of her husband. Ebenezer, Simon Samaset, the last Ramah. I believe a few things. Rabotai, just for the record, both Hakot Maimini and the Rambam, and the Groh, the Biruan Shulchan Aruch, and that's the most authoritative work, cite Avot, the cite Tomit of Eliyahu is the source for the Rambam. What does that prove me in terms of methodology? If the Vilna Gaon cites Tana de Beliyahu, what's it mean? There isn't a Babli and there isn't Yerushalayim. I've heard it from a young Tamil Chacham here in North America that some people have cited Nadorim Tana Chacham and Beit. There's no suggestion of Chiyuv. It's a very strange story. Everybody knows that narrative. Of Yehuda ben Bava. When a man told, a woman thought it was what? That her husband had told her to throw some candlesticks at Yehuda ben Bava. She didn't understand him, of course. And she threw them at Yehuda ben Bava. And she explained why to Yehuda ben Bava. Yehuda ben Bava said, Bo Amakom, you should be blessed by Kodesh Baruch Hu that you carried out the will of your husband. A, it's an odd narrative, but she's got the interpretation. B, there's certainly no suggestion that a woman's obliged to do that sort of thing. The word Chorbah does not appear in that text. The word Chorbah does appear in front of Eliyahu. There's apparently no Tavliya Yerushalmi to this effect. It does appear in the Ramah. Interestingly, it appeared in lengthy spelling written more or less for women. The Latino Sefer, since translated into all languages, Menorah Tamor, which is a very popular work, written especially for women, I should say. But there it's given as advice. It's given a pragmatic basis. The Rambam gives it a halachic basis. Menorah Tamor says, make yourself like his maidservant. Pretend that he's the boss. And you shall rule over him. Now, what they're doing is a feminine charm. Bathsheba doesn't have the influence on David HaMelech by talking in the same way as Nathan Hanavi. She's not the critical voice of conscience, but she sees only good in him. She'll pretend she's carrying out his will, but she's got him under her thumb. That's Menorah Tamor. That's pragmatic. It's counseling. The Rambam is moral. The Rambam's laying down criteria. The Rambam is formulating regulations. And says she should subordinate herself to us. Rabotai, obedience has entered the halakha primarily on account of the Rambam, with only one known earlier source in the Midrash. But before we become too unpopular with the ladies in Stern College, I want to warn all the men here. If you think you can take your wife to the Beit Din, Rabbani, be it in New York or in Eretz Israel, claim that you wish to divorce her unilaterally, and the chelem we heard out from one of the ladies speakers this morning, the chayim rabbi negeshom negeshim bar kocha shouldn't apply. Take Sefer Oktuba. She's an obeyer of that. Why? I told her repeatedly not to visit that friend. I don't like her. That is for somebody who I don't like her. I can't stand her. Sinatim. Let it be Sinatim. My wife's not going to visit people I don't like. I talk about a lady friend, there's nothing past the Khalil of Mesechet Saita here. It's not once, it's 10 times. She doesn't even pretend to hide it from me. I want to get. Rabbi died. The husband wants to be divorced, the disobeying wife. The husband wants to assert that disobedience is a legal offense. With legal ramifications, contractual ramifications. Number two, save your time and save your money. You don't have a chance, husband. Nobody suggested for a moment that disobedience comes in the class of a marital debt. That means the sinful woman, two kinds we have, of course, Obeba Dat Moshe, Obeba Dat Yehudit, very concisely defined. In the Mishnah, the Sugyot, in the Rishonim, Mesechet Tuvot, Ayin Aleph. Very concisely defined. Even Aveirot as such. Even since Tzavos Baruch Hu. only make our version of that is either A, they're in the moral sphere, and we all know, there's Hamur. Could be even Kisirosh. Or B, she causes him or the children to sin. Disobedience as such is not a factor. Does not suffice for any legal ramifications. And I want to go one stage further to get the halakha exactly concise. Rabotai, we heard about Berman this morning make an important distinction. One, in fact, I must say, with all the writing was new to me, the stress was certainly new. That sometimes something is admonished in very early authorities, and yet it doesn't have the full force of halakha. Sometimes almost turned an eight satova. The distinction is fundamental in many halakha. The mitzvah chiyuvit, as we call it in the yeshivot. The absolutely obligatory mitzvah, and the eitzah tovah, which is more than eitzah tovah. And the moral recommendation is probably the best English. A recommendation reflecting rabbinic moral values. When we have something in Hilchot Ishut, I always tell my students, we must divide it into three categories. A, legal ramification, which I've already described to you, its usual unilateral gay regime without ketubah. B, halachic full sanction, which means it's a proper Hashem Nonian paper. It's a defined avera. It's infringement of the halacha. You're not a Shomer Mitzvot Puri. See, a rabbinic recommendation based on rabbinic moral values and their picture, their image of how the family relationship should be. I think this belongs to C, not to A and not to B. This sort of questions fight. For example, in determining whether spacing is permitted after one's had a boy and a girl. But we won't talk about that today. That's just something to think about. If the Din of Rabbi Yeshua, Lo Era, is Chova or not. This distinction is not hairsplit. This distinction can make all the difference in the halakha. Rabbinic recommendation, which is more than an eitzah,
I would strengthen the word eitzah,
or rabbinic mechayev. Now, for today, I discussed it with colleagues at first without a makor, and we concluded that the Rambam here belongs to C. With a chaver from a kibbutz who gave me this idea, and he has a Goldman, Tamil Kochum, from kibbutz. One of the people seen in the name of Beit Shams, Daily Hour, I believe. He said that you see it from the beginning and the end of the Rambam. Still today, I have to ask his forgiveness that I didn't write it in his name. V'chein tzivu chachamim al ha'isha. He claims that tzivu chachamim is always a moral directive.
Rav Berman, the parallel,
it's the same lashon in Hilchot Talmud Torah.
In the Rambam.
But more so the ending. V'derech benot Yisrael u'bnei Yisrael haktoshim batorim bezivugan. And this is the way the daughters and the sons of Israel, holy and pure, in their coming together, in their union and so forth. Is that the way you write halacham chayevet? Based on a makor in Midrash and that sort of lashon, inductively, what conclusion do we come to? After years, and in my new edition of Ish V'Ishto, I've inserted it, I've seen it mefurash, the Sefer HaMakne. Makne Kedushim Dav Lamed Aleph. Says mefurash, that the field of the Rambam of Morah the Isha, the Bala, the obligation spoken of in this part of the Rambam, of reverence and similarly obedience apparently, is non-halachic. Rabotai, somebody sent me a note, a very big Tamil Chacham, I don't think he's here today, Reb Dov.
Thank you.
That Rav Ariel in Inayim Mishpat, which I have at home in Petah Tikva, never mind in the university, very important paper, contests the Lachman. Well, in Montreal, I wasn't able to get it. Not even at Lubavitch. And here, the weekend, I also didn't get it. I don't know. Do you have an Irish here?
No.
Yes. I would like to check. Who's your number that was? He said he contests the Magna. I would like to see what basis and so forth. We assumed that the Rambam's not halachic. Now, to conclude, what is this important for? After all these interesting examples, why is the elaboration of it halachic? Do you know why? If it's halachic, it's absolutely mandatory. There are no exceptions. If it's halachic, you have Torah in the heart. You either submit to the halacha or you don't. We know what happens, especially in North America, when people make exceptions, when they make doctrinal exceptions. If it's halachic, we have to keep it. If it's non-halachic or recommendation, then perhaps a woman's entitled to ask herself how badly he's mistaken. If it's non-halachic, and it's a directive reflecting moral values, then one starts making assessments. What's the price you have to pay? What's the moral price you have to pay? What's the satisfaction price you have to pay? That is terribly, terribly significant. If it's non-halachic, it's not absolutely categorical. If that woman's absolutely convinced that her husband's very much mistaken, it is Eretz Yisrael Ashleiman as part of our Yahadut. And it really matters. And it's not just a matter of talking more. If that woman's absolutely convinced that she's got a contribution to make in a certain vocation, she must do it. Be it Torah, be it a shiur, be it a meeting, be it forex, be it anything. If it's non-halachic, it gives lots and lots of space for personal satisfaction.
Mr. E, in conclusion,
and we are concluding with one mishpat. Obedience as such, lahavdil, comes from another religion. And I saw it there. It's not only their marriage ceremony, till the marriage of the celebrant, of the century, when you refuse to say it. It's not only their marriage ceremony, I promise to obey this sort of thing. It's reflected at every stage in life. For us, marriage is a very profound union of love. That individual responsibility and individual aspiration stay there and make the marriage richer. And another place, another platform, I've written about children-parent relations. And I'm convinced that applies there too. I talked about that yesterday at the invitation of Rav Berman in the Beit Knesset. It pervades everything. With all the Emunah Chachamim, with all the emphasis on authority, our Judaism leaves lots and lots of space, primary space, for individual responsibility. The family is so important. The man-woman relationship from the beginning of Bereshit. Zachu Shchina Benea. But the strength of it is the individual aspiration. Moray Rabotai, Mr. Dean, I make no apologies about being 20th century change. It's been there in the language of our speaker this morning without apologies, without apologetics. It's been there all the time, only some people have covered it up. Let's uncover it again. So.
Speaker. Rabbi Dr. Moshe Weibelman is also, I suspect, better known to us through his enormously popular book, Jewish Woman and Jewish Law. Rabbi Meibelman brings to an extensive encyclopedic halachic and Talmudic knowledge, the precision also of his scientific background, PhD in mathematics from MIT, in addition to his extensive training in halacha and Talmud. When yeshiva needed a dean at the new branch that was opening, the new affiliate, I should say, that was opening on the West Coast, Yeshiva University of Los Angeles, it naturally turned to Rabbi Meibelman. And he was the first academic dean, but he has not been active in recent years because he made Aliyah several years ago to go up to Eretz Israel to found his own yeshiva, Torah Moshe, which is named after his illustrious and unforgettable grandfather, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. His book, which I suspect is familiar to most of us, contains a wealth of information and insight into halacha and the Jewish woman. It is a real pleasure, privilege, and honor to be able to bring him to this lecture to speak on the Jewish woman at the synagogue, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Meibelman.
I'd like to thank Seth Ellison for allowing me the opportunity to start my remarks. The topic woman in the synagogue. Came about in a curious way. I was a little forgetful to learn Arabic when I spoke to Rabbi Rabinowitz on the phone. I hope that's because it was transcontinental at the time. Warren Erevin, 6th Perek, tells us an example of Kol HaMizgoa Chachmoto Mitalo Temenu. Anyone who is arrogant, not as Halacha, but as Baruch Hu is teaching a lesson, takes his Chachma away from him to make sure that he's Nishol. He gives us an example, leaves us a brah. One day says that when anyone asks me any shayla anywhere, I will answer it. And someone asked him a shayla, and he wasn't able to answer it. When Rabbi Rabinowitz asked me what topic I wanted to talk about, I said, well, whatever you wish. So he proceeded to take a topic that I didn't see at all in my book, very much b'chavonah, by no oversight, and told me, well, I guess he should take that topic. I ended up with a topic that for many reasons I decided to eliminate in my book. The reason I did that is that the topic of women in the synagogue, in its current interest, really has two foci. One, the popular topic question that was referred to in the very beginning of the afternoon, women of synagogue presidents, women of synagogue board. Now that's a topic which, before I expound on it, my own attitude is that it's relatively trivial, unimportant, and within 200 years, while much of the corpus of halakhic discussion nowadays that has come as a consequence to the women's movement will be incorporated to the general corpus of halakha. See, I believe in in 200 years, this segment of halakhic discussion will be forgotten about. That is number one, why I believe that it is essentially a trivial topic. And second of all, growing up in a family of Rabbonim, we've never had particularly respect for synagogue board and synagogue president. That is the first topic on women in the synagogue. The second topic on women in the synagogue, of course, a topic that I did deal with quite extensively in my book, and that is various, I said, prayer issues. Aliyas, Hakafis, women's minyanim, and all these various associated activities. Now this is the you present a real problem. And there are many serious halachas that are involved. However, just because of the time constraints that I have, what I'd like to do is that whereas many of my attitudes are known because of the book, and whether people agree with them or disagree with them, but they are known, I would like to really put the bulk of my time into a question of women in positions of power. I'd rather formulate it that way. Women in positions of power in the Jewish community. Number one, and on the prayer issue, if time will allow, just to discuss the single issue of what I would not call as women minyanim, but I would call as women prayer groups. Now, gathering from the conclusion of Professor Ellison, and much of the tenor in the sense of the content of his discussion, there are a few preliminary remarks that I'd like to make which reflect not only certain general attitudes to these specific issues, but to much of the feminist issue at large. Now, while these remarks are relatively elementary to anyone who speaks in halakha, in the words of the Masilas Yesharim, sometimes it's important to reiterate the obvious, to make it clear and unequivocal. Because so too often, the obvious is taken for granted. And within the wealth of words, people sometimes can too easily forget them. Would the feminist critique of life in general, Judaism in specific, how often in the more specific, been merely a series of halakhic questions, then the proper form of response would be a Shailin Shula session. Certainly would not be the literature that has arisen, the conferences that are held, whether it's this one or many other types. But as we all are very well aware, the critique is both halakhic and what I would call meta-halakhic. That is, Judaism is on the one hand, there is a halakha. But we are not mere automatons. We do exist within certain social realities. We do have certain attitudes, one of environment, one of social situations. And what is critical is to what degree do halachos reflect, imply these social attitudes? To what respect do they demand a certain degree of social reality as the proper framework for the performance of other halachos, for the furtherance of Jewish life? For example, the very final comment of Professor Ellis. Kedoshim v'tahorim v'tivugam. Kedoshim v'tahorim. Maybe a halacha, maybe not a halacha. Depends on how one interprets the Ramban, the famous Ramban, Kedoshim Tiyu, of being a novel Bishut HaTorah. Whether Kedoshim is halacha or not halacha. But whether Kedoshim is halacha and whether Tahorim is halacha, what it certainly says is that there are certain social frameworks, certain social realities that halacha cannot be oblivious to. Now, halachic discourse is a very technical discourse. There are rules. There are ways of making decisions. How one works with precedent and how one breaks with precedent. Halachic discourse has to be made as much as we, as both of us, as we as human beings, are capable of doing so. On strict halachic grounds, though non-halachic issues that are ancillary to halachic discussion are subsequent to halachic consideration. What is the Jewish attitude in general to X, Y, and Z must begin with a totally technical halachic discussion. Once that halachic discussion is concluded, one can then say, well, what are the social conclusions one has to make? One does not begin with general vague social reality, social attitudes, and determine halacha of what. This is ABC from the point of view of halacha. There's a second point that's important. And that second thing that's important is that that movement from halacha to social commentary is very often a matter of speculation. It's very often a matter of interpretation. And very often a matter of response to social conditions. But that, on the other hand, does not render it invalid. It is important. It enables us to develop insight into Judaism, into Torah. But at one and the same time, never become halachically correct. Now, the synagogue as pertains to women's issue, in the first part of my discussion, is really a question of the arena of public power. That is why two things are true. It is much more of a critical issue here in the United States, where I used to live, than it is in Eretz Yisrael, where I currently live. Because in the United States, the whole focus of the community revolves around the synagogue. Community very often equals synagogue. Communal power very often equals synagogue. feminism has many aspects to it. Feminism, on the one hand, social commentary, the social movement. Feminism is at the same time not only a social movement, it's also a political movement. Certainly the nomination of a woman as vice presidential candidate in the recent presidential election reflects feminism as a political movement, as aspiration for power, and how women's position in society reflects and is reflected in their aspirations for power. From a technical halakhic point of view, the issue is not one of the synagogue. The issue is the permissibility of women occupying positions of public authority and public service. There is a secondary issue. That is, whether synagogue board members, synagogue presidents, do have public power. And that's the more factual question, which rather skips. That very often depends on who is the rabbi, who is the rebbe, and that is something that is certainly not given to gross generalization. As anyone who is mildly familiar with the topic knows, the point of departure in this entire thing is the Rambam. The Rambam has many interesting attitudes towards women. Rabbi Allinson managed to give us a very liberal attitude of the Rambam. The Rambam is, as quoted, said, a woman's not the base of Zohar, so her husband cannot forbid her from leaving the house. Therefore, the Rambam says she may leave the house once a month. Now, the basic halakha that the Rambam says is based on a Sifri. The Sifri on the Pasuk Tzom Tosim Alecha Melech Melech Velo Malka says that there is a halakha that Judaism recognized, a monarchy as the ideal political system for many reasons. But our point here, those interested in interesting truth for the Maram Rukh. However, in so saying that Judaism recognized a monarchy as the ideal system, it also said who may occupy that position of monarch, and the Sifri says Melech Olamot, king and not queen. The Rambam proceeds to elaborate on that. The Rambam says Olamot Bilvad, it's not only kingship, Elokol Adosino, all appointed positions of authority within the community, even the commissioner of waterworks, Amatamai, can be men, not women. This halacha in the Rambam clearly stated unequivocally. However, the question arises, a very simple question that every Baal halacha confronts, to what degree is the Rambam authoritative here? Does anyone who disagree with the Rambam, who concurs with the Rambam, says? One looks at the Radvaz, one of the commentators in the Rambam. Radvaz raises the obvious problem. Obvious problem of the vote. Vote Isha Nadia, Isha of this Israel by time. Problem of the vote is a double problem. The problem that the Radvaz raises, that a judge, a shofetet, has communal authority. Problem number one. Problem number two, that Tosfos was more bothered by, was a simple question. Who is kosher logum and who is not kosher logum? This is a very, that means the halacha determines who qualifies to sit on a bais din, who is not qualified to sit on a bais din. Who is qualified? So the Mishnah says, anyone who's partial Levayit. And the simple interpretation of the Mishnah is that there is an equation between Eidos and Dayanos who can testify to the one who can judge. Which would imply that whereas the woman cannot testify, oh, if you want to see an analysis of that, they can see my book. Therefore, she cannot be a judge. And the immediate question, the Tosfos asks, and subsequently the Tosfos, all we shall come out there, so therefore, how is the Torah a judge? There are three answers given to that question. One, stated clearly by the Ritva, and most probably by Rabbi Natan as well, that rule, that equation is not 100% correct. A woman cannot testify, but she can be a judge. That is not only to be a judge, certainly in the way the Ritva seems to apply it, means she not a judge in the sense of Erev Yom Kippur, we want to be Matan Nedarim, so we have three people in Shul sit down together for Hataras Nedarim. That is not a position of any communal responsibility. The sense that the Ritva seems to imply is she can accept a communal appointment, she can coerce litigants to appear in front of her, and she can act in every communal position as a judge would, and that is how the Gaon would point the fact it acts. Now, that is the position of the Ritva, that is the position of the, apparently, of the Rabbeinu Tam. Apparently, the Rabbeinu. There are two other positions, which are the more popular position among the Rishonim. One is that a woman may be a judge. However, that's only if the various valedvarim, the various litigants, accept her as a judge. She cannot occupy a communal position as judge. The third opinion is the opinion that a woman can never be a judge. Under any circumstances can she be a judge. She can only advise judges, teach them, educate them, be the most important person in the Jewish community, the person called the gachron for the judges, but on the bez din itself she cannot. Which tells an awful lot about the technicalities of halacha. That one should not interpret that the disqualification of a judge, the disqualification of a woman from being a judge is because of any inferior attributions of intellectual ability. No. She can tell me, the judge of the judges. She can be the one whom the judges call up on the telephone to ask how do I pass. She can be the one who sets the tenor. She can be the post goblin of the door. But she cannot have a certain technical job, a certain technical responsibility. These final two positions are the overwhelming positions among Rishon. Take a look in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Zayin, Choshen Mishpat, Shulchan Aruch passes unequivocally against Ritva and passes the Rabbeinu Tam, a woman is possible. That means, as far as simple halacha l'maaseh, we do not have anyone explicitly who disagrees with the Rabbah. Although all those other Rishonim disagree with the Rabbah, accept the Rabbah, that's not 100% clear. Because there are two issues that are involved in this dispute about a woman being a judge. One issue is technical. It's a psak din of a woman, a psak din, on a bed. That's a very technical point of view. Maybe independent of her ability to assume communal responsibility. It could be that those who disagree with the Ritva, possibly Rabbi Natan, agree with them in disagreeing with the Rambam, i.e., say that a woman can't assume any communal position of power except technically put Piskei Din on a Bez Din on a Piskei Din. Possibly. On the other hand, could be they agree with Rambam. However, if one looks at it a little more carefully, it becomes clear that the second opinion that I discussed, the one that says that she can be on a Bez Din if the Balei Dvarim, the litigants, accept her, is obviously telling us something. It's obviously telling us the Mishnah, Piskei Din, her Pesach Din on a Bez Din is a Pesach Din. She cannot coerce. She has no position on the third. The third opinion, that she can under no circumstances ever be on a Bez Din, that's not 100% clear. What that implies vis-a-vis our more general issue. However, when what is left with is, first of all, a decision by the Rambam. The halakha of Melech for the Malka I have never found in Rishonim, although I'm not exhaustive, a researcher of the topic, as others. I have never found in Rishonim anyone who disagrees with the Rambam is technically Melech for the Malka. The only one who I've seen is some later Achronim, seems to question it, but we've seen a Pesach Halacha that was not carried away. The Ritva, who seems implicitly to disagree with the Rambam in terms of his extension from Melech HaLamalka to other positions of communal authority, Shulchan Aruch happens again. We certainly have a group of Rishonim, i.e. those who say that the Balei Dvarim can accept a woman in political and positions of authority, apparently concurring with the Rambam. So therefore, it's highly suggested that, in terms of passing a simple shayla, almost probably would feel comfortable that the Rambam's position has many other people besides the liberal Rambam, people who concur. Now there's the Rambam, a very important Rambam. The Rambam says in Siman Lamed Zayin, Choshen Mishpat, that the technical halachos of Beis Din apply not to Beis Din, they apply to all positions of communal authority. Therefore, the Rambam says, a Rasha, a person disqualified from being on an A, being on the Beis Din, because he violates the law of saying the Torah, which you're high in Malkin, or he misappropriates funds of the Rosh Hashanah, even though there's no malchus misappropriation of funds, he cannot have any position of authority within the community. Now, this certainly tells a lot about the ability of Mechalei Shabbos to be Shul President. The Rambam explicitly says no. It certainly tells even on the Chalei Shabbos who have been convicted of misappropriation of funds in general, fraud, etc., of assuming positions of communal authority. Somehow, people are more concerned nowadays about women doing it than the latter two categories. However, does that mean that given the fact of the Rambam, and the Rambam does not disagree with the Mechaber on the basic halacha that a woman cannot be a dayan? I don't know whether the Rambam is limiting his remarks only to Russia or to all students. The Rambam could be interpreted as many mafarshim with the Rambam would say in a very simple way. Let's ask ourselves a simple shayla. A policeman stops you, you're speeding. And now he's obviously asserting some authority. And you know, when you hand him your license, you get the ticket, you have a $20 bill, and with your license, you will not get the ticket. Now, this is a halacha. So it's in the Torah, you know, for shoka lo sigo. You know how to give shoka, take shoka. Shoka is a very well documented issue. Question is, Shokhan is offered to a dayan, to a judge. So that policeman standing there giving me tickets, exercising his authority, does he have the halacha of a dayan, or he doesn't have the halacha of a dayan? very simple shaila. It could very well be that what the Ramah is saying is that any person exercising authority in a discretionary manner on behalf of the community is always so dying. Doesn't have to be a judge sitting in court. The policeman deciding to give me a ticket for speeding is witso adayim. That's why all the psukim that apply to dayanus apply also to positions of communal decision making. If we take this tack in understanding the Ramah, then the Ramah has decided clearly, unequivocally, Ramah is a potagakra of Ashkenazic jury, says the answer simply, the Rambam is right, nothing to talk about, no further discussion. On the other hand, wouldn't it be wonderful if life was simple? The Rambam talks about a very unique psalm, talks about the psalm of Rush. Rush could be saying, a person who starts at everything that we hold dear and valuable. A person who's a Machal Shabbos for Fayez. A person who goes from the veil of betrayal. A person who's guilty of fraud. We don't want him exercising any authority in our community. We don't want him being held up as an example to people in the community. He tramples on what we hold dear. That could be what the Ramah is talking about. And it could be that the Ramah says there's nothing wrong with giving $20 to policemen too. However, it's not 100% clear. If one wants to look at Shua Halacha to say, Rishonim 100%, Rishonim 100% say one thing, it's hard to find for many reasons that we'll come to right now. Certainly, the Rambam, certainly a whole host of other Rishonim say it. There is no one who clearly disagrees with them. When I mean say it, that a woman cannot have the position of public authority in the community. And someone's a paskin and a shayla, forgetting for the moment that this is an emotionally charged issue. As I said at the very beginning, when you paskin and a shayla, you first work with halakhic dynamics, then you work with social implications. I can't think of any shayla, that if I know that there's a rabbi who says author, I know there are a whole host of Rishonim who say author, and there are possibly Rishonim who say Mutter. I cannot think of any shayla that I ever passed in except maybe the Kotnefer shayla, Naguna shayla, or something of that compelling nature that one would say, therefore Mutter. But that really, I think, is besides the point. The point is, what is the nature of Jewish communal life? I think, if I look at it as a Rosh Hashiva, if I look at it as a Pose, I look at it as I've described it until now. But, if I look at it from the point of view of a social commentator, it's my first reaction the entire women's movement talk about power and power and power. And political power in the Jewish community is a very simple Maamar Chazal, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that we all know very well, I hope. Those who don't know it should repeat it many times every day. When Rabbi Yisrael Talant was nifter, the words that were in his mouth, Hakineh v'hataydeh v'hakavel motzina to others. Now, the question is, what is the reason that people want to assume positions in the Jewish community? Is it to advance certain political the power goal for themselves. I can't even buy a type of our public mostly in this article. Is it from a genuine sense of communal responsibility? Is it because I feel that the community is not being well served by the people and the pain of the community I feel so deeply? Then that's a very positive read. But I don't think it's a man's issue, I don't think it's a woman's issue. I think the issue is very simply that if I, in the community, listen to people talking about communal power, communal power, communal power, not as a Poseg, not as a Rosh Hashiva, but simply as a sensitive Jew, I know I feel turned off. And to think in those terms of where is the source of communal power going to lie, much as one heard in the rhetoric before the recent presidential nomination, that may be good in the political sphere, in the Jewish religious sphere. And I, for one, find it repulsive. In terms of halacha, let me just summarize. In terms of halacha, there is a very vast literature. Those of you who have read Rabbi Blige's book know that he summarized it quite effectively. See, I need to say the halachic issue, while unclear from the point of view of being a Rosh Hashiva, from the point of view of passing a Shaila, I see very difficult to pass in any way except God. Number one, from the point of view of Jewish communal life, even if one would argue mutter, even if one would have the general problem of simply trying to understand motivation. Now, I, once a shayla came to my rabbi, to give you the Yom Tov Marut. A woman came to him with a shayla about wearing a talis. She didn't come to him with a shayla of wearing a talis cotton. Came to him with a shayla of wearing a talis gold. And he asked her, why is it that she wanted to wear a talis gold? And she gave him many reasons why she wanted to wear a talis gold. It would improve her, it would inspire her, it would uplift her. Kahenev, kahenev, kahenev. And somehow he felt something wasn't 100% correct. And he responded, well, maybe that's a very big step for you to take. Maybe you're not ready for such a big step. Maybe you should go back. Maybe you should first wear the talus without the tzitzis, and then come back in 3 months, we'll discuss it, what'll happen, whether you can put the tzitzis on the talus. So, 3 months later, she came back in. Having davened in shul very regularly and very zealously with the talus every Shabbat. And said, Rebbe, now can I proceed to the next level? Putting tzitzis on my talus. And he asked her, well, what did you feel like the past 3 months? Did this talent achieve any of your desired ends? And she answered, well, it was uplifting. She waxed eloquent about the wondrous results of wearing a talent during her davening. He responded to her very simply, that apparently your need for a talent has nothing to do with Kiyum HaMitzvah. We've had no Kiyum HaMitzvah at all for 3 months. Your need for a talis belongs to another dimension of your Jewish conscience. And as such, I don't believe it would be appropriate to use tzitzis in that direction for that end and for that way. One always has to look at motivation. You always have to understand underlying social trends, where they're leading, where they're going, what their purpose is. That underlying social trend positive for Judaism in general or negative for Judaism in general? Now, from the point of view of technical halacha, there's nothing forbidden, as was so well documented, I think, as the relevant sense, of a woman going out to work. Nothing. Nothing wrong, nothing forbidden, everything permitted. Misstated. Before, clearly, a woman can enter the public sphere. However, there are countless halachas, countless halachas, that guarantee a woman's right to be at home. There are countless halachas that guarantee a woman's right to be part of the private sphere rather than the public. Called Furabat Melech Pnima is not a minor aspect of Judaism. Called Furabat Melech Pnima is a positive. Called Furabat Melech Pnima, as rancorous as it may be to people who are brought up in Western culture, is a fundamental part of the fabric of halacha. And what the halacha did not want, and there are countless examples, anyone who's mildly familiar with my book knows that, there are countless examples where halacha wanted to eliminate from women pressures of violating cultural about that. Now, the Anius Dati, for women to join men in the Jewish political struggle and attempt to say who will achieve what sort of political power in the Jewish community, just goes against the whole fabric of what's called food about melody. This may not, borrowing the categories of Trezel, this may not be coercive halakha. This certainly is against what I would call, forms of my Rebbe, thematic halakha. There is thematic halakha as well, coercive halakha. Called food about melody, certainly an important theme in the halakha. I have a few more minutes, so rather than continue with women synagogue board, just